everybody. Welcome to No Story is Sacred. If you've never listened before, basically we're four siblings who grew up talking about the art of storytelling. Now that we're adults, we're still talking about it, and we're inviting you to join the conversation. I'm Kat, and I don't really play video games, so I have no future in this world.
I'm Brendan, and I actually work with VR.
I'm Pippin, and I swear I must have a place somewhere in this world.
I'm Alex, and I already have an immersion device. It's called my imagination.
Burn.
Snap.
Well, today we're talking about the 2011 novel by Ernest Cline, Ready Player One. So spoilers abound. If you want other specific content warnings, want, need, desire, check out the show notes on nostoryisacred.com. For those of you who haven't read the book, the summary from Goodreads is, in the year 2045, reality is an ugly place. The only time teenage Wade Watts feels alive is when he's jacked into the virtual utopia known as the Oasis. Wade's devoted his life to studying the puzzles hidden within this world's digital confines, puzzles that are based on their creator's obsession with the pop culture of decades past, and that promise massive power and fortune to whoever can unlock them. When Wade stumbles upon the first clue, he finds himself beset by players willing to kill to take this ultimate prize. The race is on, and if Wade's going to survive, he'll have to win and confront the real world he's always been so desperate to escape. Decades past? Or decade past? Or the 80s? Just the 80s.
There's definitely 80s, but also a lot of early 90s
Not stuff. Enough early 90s.
There's no Simpsons. Like,
if you know anime, you can pick up on what that's early 90s.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, if I knew anime.
I'm sorry, there was no Sailor Moon. I was lost. Man, I would have loved this book if it had Sailor Moon in it.
Can you imagine? Well, that's okay, because it looks like the movie is going to have very weeaboo-type stuff going on, so.
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk about the maybe adaptation potential here in a second. I'm getting the vibe from you guys that you guys didn't quite enjoy the book. Is that an accurate read?
I think that's accurate.
I have mixed feelings about the book. There were bits of it I really liked.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And there were some bits that were deeply problematic.
Hey, who here, his favorite bit was when he wasn't in the Oasis and was doing espionage inside
the real world stakes bit.
Oh yeah,
yeah, in the real world.
Oh yeah, basically any time he was in the real world or at least some extension thereof
with actual stakes.
Yeah, yeah. I was all like, oh man, I am in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
well,
like the first time or the only time really he goes to that first meeting with iOS. With the villain whose name I've forgotten. iOS is different.
And Saranto.
Saranto. When he goes to that meeting after answering the email that everyone else had the good sense not to answer. You know, that whole meeting, I was like, oh man, I am so in for this. Oh yeah, look at this. Real world stakes. People die.
People legit died.
Yeah.
And then there wasn't really that much death until Daito dies later on in the story. And we're just going all spoilers heavy right at the beginning here, so sorry.
So Wade Watts lives in the stacks. He lives in abject poverty. This is a world where I guess this one virtual game has taken over everything. The internet and virtual blah, 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 blah. In this virtual world, I was thinking about this the other day. This virtual world, unlike many current startups, actually has a viable,
economy.
A viable economy and a viable profit.
But the bad guys want to take it over and be more profitable.
Basically,
they're not realizing that once they start charging people, their business model will fail once people start logging out of the Oasis and going back to their real lives.
I know,
lives.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, the implication of the setting, at least, you know, it's like, so a lot of detail can be kind of lost because who cares about the real world stuff when you're having all the fantastical virtual reality stuff, whatever. But the idea is that it's kind of like a heavy, heavy energy crisis world. So
yeah,
scarcity everywhere.
The world's sort of ending.
Yeah.
Yes.
The world is ending. Mm. And instead of doing anything to fix it, they're all chilling out in this game.
Which, you know, I can't blame them.
No, escapism is, you know, the bomb, but.
Yeah. It's a drug, man. It's a drug.
And it is actually portrayed. I don't think that the author really pushed this particularly, but it could have been a really interesting discussion about addiction.
Online game addiction is an actual thing.
Yeah.
And could have been studied a little bit. I think there were like attempts at covering that toward the end. Yeah. Like, oh, I play this game too much.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Let's go and do the espionage bit. Yay!
Well, but also, you know, so after our main character gets the first key, and so really setting off the entire, you know, chain of events.
Adventure. Adventure. Literal.
He gains a lot of in-world, like in-game money, which handily transfers, it's very cryptocurrency, transfers into real-world money. And so he can go off and buy really expensive immersion gear and a fancy Dan apartment. And what he does with this is he does buy the really fancy immersion gear, shaves his entire body, and now he can feel it when people punch him in the chest. And I'm like, really? Really?
Hey, man.
Really?
It's clutch. And, you know, here's the thing. This is me donning my VR guy hat.
Ooh.
So the most fantastical element of this virtual reality technology in this book is that haptic device, the haptic gloves and the whole full body haptic suit. That is one of those holy grail things when it comes to VR, to truly immersive VR, that hasn't really been figured out yet. Simulating motion, simulating touch.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't there yet.
We still haven't figured out how to not puke.
Well, that's the simulated motion part. And there are things that you can do to kind of simulate motion. They're a little bit weird, and I don't know if I'd trust them quite yet. Look up galvanic skin response stuff. It's there.
And I will say that people are working a great deal on all of these things. The touch thing is a major part for prosthetics, and so on. But to be fair, though, this is the future, 2045.
No, I mean, give us another 30 years, we might have some really cool haptic technology, which I think that's one of those key things, aside from this. I guess maybe the software architecture is probably the other major innovation, like being able to support all this crap at the same time.
And all those users at the same time. My God.
Mm-hmm.
Although they did do a nod toward latency issues. You know, the closer you are to these servers, the better your experience.
True.
I mean, that's nice, I guess.
Although, from a game design standpoint, who the hell makes it that there's permadeath? Oh my God.
That was actually one of the things that didn't make a lot of sense to me, because I'm used to, even I, who do not game, I'm used to save points, regeneration, any number of things like that. Yeah. And so it actually struck me as really fucking weird. And I did not expect it for there to be, you know.
The only reason I can think of the author made permadeath a thing in this game was to have that thing we talked about before, the fact that we like the IOI segment a lot, was to have some semblance of stakes.
Consequence.
Well, I would have liked it if somebody hacked into, there has to be a way to delete your character, and it would have been nice if somebody had hacked a way into deleting other people's characters.
Well, that's effectively, if you kill somebody, that's what that is.
I know, but that's making it official as opposed to sneaking around.
I just like doing the let's hack it thing, just because there's a lot involved being able to do that.
I'm in
the system. Yeah.
It's all glowy numbers, right?
I was annoyed that the avatar deaths were given the same weight, if not more, as the real world deaths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Wade Watts' aunt and that entire stack of trailers.
Including his old lady best friend.
Yeah, they're all dead.
Like, legit Daito dead.
Was thrown out of a window, spoiler alert. And it's all like, oh man, you know what's just as worse? My avatar died. I lost all of my artifacts.
All my armor.
Shoto, no! You're perfectly safe 5 feet away from me!
No! I will avenge you!
But, to be fair, for my own character dying and meaning that I lose out on the multiple billions of dollars, I'd be sad.
Sad, sure, but...
Frustrated? I don't know.
But versus actual death. And I don't think anyone ever really gave that the weight of holy shit that it deserved.
Well, there's also the fact that so much of their lives are plugged into the Oasis.
Yeah, to a disturbing degree.
And there are cases of people who have reacted in similar manners in real life.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Would have been nice to hear about that in the book.
I'm not sure we should encourage that sort of thing.
Yeah. No. Well, what I mean, though, that, you know, the idea that some people do have that reaction.
Well, it'd be hard to convey, I think.
When you do hear those stories, it tends to be, they took away his game, he took their lives.
Whoa. Sort of deal.
Oh, shit.
Like, that escalated quickly.
Yeah.
Gif.
That's what how it gets depicted in the news, anyways.
Wow.
Damn. So, We've been jumping around a little bit here.
Should we talk about our characters?
The main characters, the cast, as it were.
Yeah,
I bet that then leads into the thing that I bet Kat and I are most annoyed about.
Ooh, could be anything, or could it? Is it women?
The wheel,
maybe.
Oh no! Well, let's start with the easy stuff first.
Main character.
Our main character. Kind of boring.
His name is Wade Watts because his dad liked the names of superheroes from Marvel Comics who all had the...
Which, fair.
And also, you know what? Legit. Like, I will accept that as part of this universe. Yeah, his name's Wade Watts. He has, for some reason...
His avatar name is Parzival.
Which is awesome.
Is with odd spelling of Percival because someone already claimed Percival.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Yep.
I will say it's a little weird
on
for
the
me
nose.
That oh yeah, it's a little weird for me that in the future everybody's gone back to leet speak.
Yeah, that was weird.
That wasn't even an 80s thing, was it? That was
no, that was a 2000s thing.
Yeah, like
I'm thinking that it was really popular when the author was writing it. He wasn't expecting it to go out of style so fast
to fade out.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the trick with leet speak going away has been the fact that mobile phone communication technology has really amped up in the time since then.
True.
So we do a lot more like shorthand acronyms and stuff like that instead of leet speak. Yeah, that the leet speak dates it horribly.
Well, the big problem is that online linguistics moves a lot faster than real-world linguistics. And so stuff that comes into favor and leaves again is it happens fast. I have a book that I would totally love to write called Let Me Tell You Tumblr About My Time Traveler. But it involves Tumblr speak, and that changes from week to week, which is why I have not actually written this.
I'd probably avoid,
Exactly.
Yeah.
Also, quick aside, Sucksores, really?
Ugh.
Oh, yeah.
You already gave them the nickname of the Sixers. What?
That's good enough.
Sixers
let's
was
go
a great name. I think Sixers is a great, but then you take it a step further. And
the narration goes back to calling them Sixers anyways.
So there's a lot of backpedaling that happens, like we'll do this and then we'll do this instead. The one thing that I really didn't care about with kind of Wade as a character is just the I almost call it the pop culture salad.
Yeah,
it's like word salad, but just chock full of pop culture references. it didn't really help serve anything aside from, let's just have a laundry list of pop culture references. It's like, I know this and this and this and this,
this and this.
Oh yeah, and this and this and this. And it's like, I get it. Can we go on to the adventure?
But did you know as a matter of fact, I didn't know this.
Look, I understand Joust. Let's just get to Joust. I understand he's a good, you know, he's a knowledgeable character.
Well, you know,
let's
regarding Joust, actually, I didn't mind that because I didn't know what the hell Joust was. So that was useful. But I find out that he and H have played it in their basement, and this is how you play it, and now he plays it.
Oh, yeah.
That's fine.
That's the good part.
And it's also, Joust is also important to the plot. It's just sometimes I'm like, oh, no, we don't need
that much.
Every single reference that's happened.
Ever.
Pages-long discussions of all of the, did he watch all of this show? Yeah, he sure did. What about this show? That one, too.
You know as shit I did. Yeah.
Will it be useful later? Maybe.
No.
It won't be.
Yeah. If it were at least that, you know, when you make a page-long reference like that, if it comes in handy at the very end of the book, like, oh, yeah, we solved and saved the day by a Lady Hawk reference. Yes.
You're right. Lady Hawk never fucking came back, did it?
No.
I don't think so.
It was referenced, but it wasn't actually important to the quest.
There are lots of cases of Chekhov's gun just sitting there, such as that time Wade bought a gun and a flak jacket them in extreme detail.
Wait, what?
He bought a gun.
Yeah, he buys a gun.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. In the real world, buys a gun and a flak jacket. And you're like, is he going to have to escape Columbus? Fighting his way through legit sixer or
hit squads?
That would have been amazing.
Yeah. I'm calling it now. The movie's going to have that sixer hit squad as they're trying to escape Columbus.
Good call.
It'll be super cool.
Yeah.
They better.
But here's the thing. I wonder what the balance is between part of the story is he has to know everything that the creator of Oasis knew in order to solve this puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's borne out. We do see that.
Yeah.
There's no cheat sheet way to do this. The question is, as writers, how would we have avoided the salad?
The pop culture salad.
Yeah.
The way you do that, Kat.
Go on.
It's not done through the character narrating at us all the knowledge. It's done with playful banter between the other egg hunters.
There you go.
So, like, you get a little bit of it with H in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
We just do it there instead of the Lady Hawk references. It's, like, stuff that's going to be relevant to the plot maybe much later on. Like, maybe when they're just chatting in the basement, H is reading up about Zork. I mean, something like that. So it's like, oh, yeah, talk about this, yada, yada, yada. Or it leads into some other, you know, tirade. It's like, oh, don't pay attention to Zork. That game sucks. It doesn't suck. It's classic,
but wait, if you do that, won't the reader then automatically know that Zork is going, like, after this happens a couple of times, and you're like, well, whatever the characters are talking about, that's coming up next.
Well, with the Zork, that one was handled all right, actually.
Actually, yeah. I thought that one was handled all right, but...
Yeah, I was trying to just pull up examples off the top of my head here.
Cheers.
It's just, I just want to avoid the narrator doing these references for the sake of the audience being like, oh, okay, yeah, he knows everything. That's cool.
I would have done it once. Just once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's true, readers do like... Humans like lists of things. We're into it. I don't know why. If you list something, that's automatically
funnier.
Number 5
might shock you.
But also, you know, like, it's a good way to pull a laugh. It's a lot of cool things. Lists are great. However, there's overdoing it. And
it felt like it was overdone.
If we'd done it once. And also, do you remember from our previous episode about Wild Wild West? The jokes that don't earn it? Or the wink and nod jokes. I felt like this was a lot of wink and nodding for people who weren't me.
It was a lot of winking nodding at me, I admit, because, like, here's the thing. Like, I remember reading this book back in, like, 2011 when it first came out. And I kind of liken it to, like, the reading equivalent of a Twinkie. I know it's bad for me. Mm-hmm. But I still enjoyed myself immensely. Now, here's the thing. I reread it for the podcast, and I can probably agree with a lot of criticism here. You know, like, I found myself skimming through the totally awkward as hell romance subplot,
for instance.
We'll be getting to that. We'll be getting to that in a bit.
Oh God. But just really skimmed through that. But then, like, I found myself, like, engaged again the most, you know, say, like, during the espionage segment. Yeah. It's like, oh, that is fun. The thing I did find annoying on a reread was the Deus Ex Machina moments. So, like, oh, and I happen to have downloaded all the access codes conveniently off screen.
Oh, yeah, that. That came out of nowhere.
And a related point is when... I don't remember if you guys remember when Artemis, who is the girl, quote unquote.
The girl, yes.
The girl who is better, I said it.
Art Freemus.
Artemis and Percival meet, or Wade, meet in front of the first key. And, you know, he's briefly worried about losing the key, to like a combat, which is a totally fair concern because we have no idea what the rules are now. And then in, like, parentheses, he's like, I would find out later that you couldn't do that. You couldn't lose your key to other people. And I'm like, wait, what? Couldn't you have fought a battle to find that out?
And I think in that very scene, she, like, swings her sword at him anyway, and then it's like, oh, no, no combat. Okay. So the parentheses thing was kind of useless, yeah.
But even that, I mean,
Yeah, Kat, you're a more seasoned writer than I am. What's the stance on parentheses in prose?
I mean, to be fair, the big rule for prose is if you can make it work, it works. I love parentheses. Yay. I mean, you know, but the problem with this parenthetical remark is that it took away action that could have been used. It's, it's like wasting a move in chess. It's, you know, if it's not important now, why mention it at all? If it is important, why not use it instead of just throwing it away in a throwaway line?
Yeah. Yeah, especially because, again, she swings at him at, like, a second later, and it's like, oh, that we already knew it wasn't going to do anything. Could have had tension.
Could have had tension, could have had discussion, could have had the I don't know, whatever the hell it was, the dead wizard guy.
A Sararak.
Yeah, could have been like, lol, you can't take keys. Good try. Do it again. I'll take all your lives.
Also, just slightly off topic, but talking about that same scene. And a problem I have with the book in general is how much all of these characters suck at operational security.
Yeah.
How so?
Well, he has a crush on Artemis, and it's creepy, and I really wish they wouldn't. But he actually knows nothing about her. Why give her any information?
Any.
Why should she give him any information?
Yep.
When the boxes got knocked over in H's basement, why did not they not immediately go, this place is dead to us, we're never meeting here again?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
With multiple billions of dollars on the line, the only people taking it seriously seem to be the Sixers.
Yeah, they're doing a great job.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, apart from, I'm like, let's make sure to record all of our wrongdoing.
Yeah.
Oh, that seems like a good
that
idea.
Seems fine. Yes. Yes.
And make sure to only store it on our intranet.
But yeah, no, they do not know what information to keep to themselves, what information to share, what how to share information with each other.
You know who had the right idea about this? Dato. Dato's like, Dido. I'm not working with, what?
Dido.
Oh, Dido. The point is, Dido had the right idea about all this. Dido was one of the other... Okay, so back to characters. Wade Watts, main character. Artemis, the girl.
The girl.
There's H, who is Wade's best friend. H is spelled A-E-C-H, because it's cool that way. Actually, that is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I listened to the audiobook.
Oh, all right.
And you never realized that it was actually spelled that way until you looked it up online and later?
Yeah.
Nice. So there's H, the best friend, and then there is Dido and Shoto, who are a pair of players who are also, you know, searching for the key. And these five people are the high five. They're the top players that are currently trying to beat each other, but also make sure that the Sixers don't win. Sixers, of course, belong to IOI, who is the big consumer
ISP bad guy.
They're your classic corporate villain.
Yeah. Very good point, Pip. Anyway, H and Wade are having our best friends, and they sort of share information, maybe, I guess.
And they're rivals.
Yeah, but you know. Artemis is the girl that Wade ignores H for, and therefore loses his friendship with his best dude friend.
Come on, Wade. What the fuck?
And then Dido and Shoto are just the two other guys on the other side of the world who are also doing pretty well for each other. There's like this weird triangle going on between Wade, H, and Artemis. And Dido and Shoto are like, Shoto's like, oh, maybe I want to get involved in this weird triangle. And Dido's like, nope.
No. Fuck those guys.
And Dido just fucks out of there. And it's like, you know, good for him. He had the right idea.
You're cool. But no.
But you guys are aware this is a competition, right?
Yeah, but these guys tried to kill me, so like I'm trying to, you know, not die.
You know, and we're thankful for the warning.
Thank you. Thank you. And now Bye. We have to go. Do you guys have any hints? We really don't. Bye.
Nope.
Also, oh my gosh, speaking of that meeting, they're warned that the IOI is willing to kill for this.
Uh-huh.
And none of them really take proper precautions.
Nope. Artemis stays at her family's house.
Wade goes closer.
Well, there's a reason for that. Because it's an independently owned internet provider in Columbus. So while it's closer in her proximity, in the game terms, he's about as far away from them as
No, remember, because their headquarters are also in fucking Ohio.
Metaphorically,
yes. Basically, he's on like one of the few servers out there in the world guaranteed not to be run by IOI.
I see. Gotcha.
Yeah.
And he changed his name, including hacking into like the citizenship the United registry.
States government.
Which always goes so well.
Does this have to have bigger consequences than our show? You can't just erase your existence and expect to get it back.
Which he does.
He does that. You are more able to restart a life in the real world than you are in Oasis.
Which is weird, but, you know, whatever.
It is. That is actually satisfyingly cyberpunkish.
True.
Which, it, you know, again, we'll get back to the characters here in a second, but I think that is one of the things that the book tries to do, is kind of like a light cyberpunk vibe.
Soft cyberpunk. Cyberpunk just kind of pastel. Oh, man, that's my aesthetic.
Yes. Cyberpink.
Yes!
Nice.
Oh, my God, that is my aesthetic.
You heard it here first, folks. We coined a new phrase.
Oh, my God, you know what cyberpink is? That what? Is Nicki Minaj and Janelle Monáe having a single together. You feeling it?
I just went to a really happy place.
So, Artemis? Or did we already expound on her character enough?
Pip's not done. I can feel it. I can feel it in my bones. Pip's not done.
I mean, listen, she is a girl and she has issues, and maybe with the love of a boy.
Who can forgive her for having, spoiler, a port wine stain on her face? Forgive her and love her in spite of or because of it?
And also, she's fat, but they never actually use that word.
No, she's just pleasantly round.
No, she's not even that. She's Rubenesque.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
That word is used like twice, and each time I wanted to punch someone in the face.
Although, Pip, I'm glad you're talking about Artemis, because can I talk about H for a second?
Can you?
H, in world, is a tall, beefy, blonde dude. That's what I got from that. But in the real Oasis, world, yeah. H is a, I think, still tall, possibly still strong, curvy, black woman.
Lesbian.
That's right, lesbian. I forgot.
I didn't.
Because...
And he forgives her for that, and he forgives her for that, too.
You know, because she didn't tell him the truth in world. And it's never discussed. I actually would have been very fascinated by the discussion of race and what you choose to be and what you choose to present as in the world, in Oasis.
As it was a throwaway line.
Yep. You had to get more girls in there. That's all it was. More girls, might as well get a lesbian in there. To be fair, though, actually, I did appreciate that back in Oasis, if H decides to present as a dude...
You can.
He can, and Wade uses the he pronouns. That's clearly what H wanted in Oasis.
The thing about the book is that I felt like I was invited, but not that I was welcome in this universe.
I don't follow.
Like, he was clearly trying. He had female characters.
Yep.
At least one of which, and to be fair, there was one of which, was like more badass than anybody. He had what was revealed at the end to be a queer character and a character of color.
Wasn't at least the queer character was actually said to be queer on page, as opposed to after the fact, a few years later, and then not supported in the movies.
Unlike some things, which I am in no way bitter about. You know, those characters exist in the book, but then they're talked about in such a way, she's...
It's almost in passing?
In passing,
is the problem, or?
She's constantly described as Rubenesque. She's clearly better than him, but yeah. She's not, like, actually allowed to do anything. And every conversation he has with her, I literally cringed.
Yeah.
Like,
I'll just keep on advancing on you. Advancing. No?
Oh. Like, the characters were there, they just weren't treated well.
Why are you breaking up with me?
Because you're a creep.
Because we got better shit to do.
We were never dating in the first place.
You know, I have to point out, Harry Potter did the same fucking thing to Ginny Weasley. And you know what Ginny did? Got the fuck on with her life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what? We'll solve this after we take care of the problem at hand, okay? Okay. What?
And Ginny was bummed about it, but then she fucking went on. There was a war on. And you know what? He was the chosen one, so... You know,
yeah. Honestly, I found the romance subplot was just a distraction. I think it was like we need to fill pages here. Here we go.
Mean, don't get me wrong. I love a good romance as much as the next person. And I'm assuming the next person is Pip. Hi, Pip.
Hey.
Sup? But this was awkward,
to put it nicely.
I really liked the friendship between H and Wade. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So I was really upset when Wade was abandoning H to hang out with Artemis, when I was like, no, stop it, you're being creepy about her.
And also, I thought it was a very, I liked the sort of implications behind Daido and Shoto. Wade assumed that they were brothers, and it turns out, no, they were just really, really, really close friends. And you know what? Like, that exists. That's the kind of shit that people have, online friends. You can have that. Also in love? Sure. But
listen, platonic soulmates can be a thing.
Exactly. And I appreciate that that was an element that he brought in.
Okay. So I think we've kind of focused on the negative a little much here. Let's try and talk about some of the stuff we really liked in the story.
Can I tell you one of my favorite images in the whole thing? Was when the great and powerful Og, which I weirdly loved that. Was doing the disco, which is weird. But the Sixers attacked. Not going to get into how weird that was. And he burst out of his disco bubble. And
keep talking.
And electrocuted all the Sixers. And I could see it in my head. And I'm like, oh man, that looks so cool. I was like, I appreciated that.
And you know, that's the thing that I think the book does pretty well, like with the Oasis scenes and stuff like that, is that when we're not focusing on the weird social interaction bits, there's some fun description stuff happening here. I mean, vivid landscapes are described, fantastical elements galore. It's just the character interactions were just a little weird to me.
It's one of those weird things that you don't actually see it in the novel at first, but like being able to do action better than dialogue.
I will also say that I really appreciated, gonna show that I'm boring again, I like the economics. I thought that was well thought out. You know, there was a serious economic problem in-world that was part of why they were trying to deal with it.
That's why the prize was so neat.
Exactly. That's the way travel worked, the way the game would make money. And it would. Was really, really great. You could sell virtual reality space, you know, to make your own cool worlds. But you also could charge people for transporting from area to area, which is great. I mean, you can, it seems to be a viable use of cryptocurrency. you know, all sorts of things. I thought that that was really well established. And it made me, I admit, I totally wanted to go visit. I didn't want a full fucking haptic suit, because what's the point? The only reason I could see wanting a full haptic suit is if you're going to go to one of the sex worlds, which I think we all agree there have to be more than one.
Kat, are you saying...
that was a weird moment.
Kat, are you saying that...
he got a sex bot, I forgot. yes.
Oh, God. I managed to repress that.
Yeah, he gets a sex bot, and then he's like, this is gross. And you know what? He's right.
Wait,
go on. You were saying...
Kat, I'm going to make fun of you. Kat, are you saying that you wouldn't get a full haptic suit if you could get a hug from Bucky Barnes?
Fuck you. How do you know that's not my sex planet?
No, that's the thing about the world is and this book in general, really, is I feel like if all the references were like a decade later, I'd be way more into it.
You know what? Actually, that makes an interesting point. I'm glad you brought that up. Did it bother anybody else that time seemed to have stopped culturally?
Yes.
Yeah.
From like 2010 onwards. There were no throwaway lines about such and such poet or such and such franchise or anything like that. This is such a culture-driven world in book and in VR, but there's no hint as to what has happened in the meantime. I mean, you'd think isn't there a different people create video games? It bothered me. It made it seem as if this should be an alternate now as opposed to future.
Here's the thing. Early on in the book, it was mentioned that one of the side effects of this great race for the prize and all that was the fact that as a society, it kind of had everybody really go in hard on the 80s, 90s, 2000s
references.
Just because... Well, there was Japanese stuff there, too.
But the contest has only been going on for 5 years.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
So why aren't there... Or even just references to artifacts from other things.
Exactly. I would have been so much happier if we'd gotten some hint of, like, what was the world like 5 years before? You know? What kind of...
Well, going through, like, wars and an energy crisis, I believe.
Well, yes, but culturally.
Did Antarok like Stranger Things? Which would have been, like, his...
Oh, my God.
A show made for him.
Holy shit.
Oh, God. Oh, Stranger Things planet.
Someone has to write that fic.
Someone, Pip.
Andy Weir, get on that.
No,
Andy Weir wrote a canonical prequel fanfic.
Did he really?
Whoa.
Oh, yeah, he did. It's about Sorrento.
Oh, nice. I'll have to read it.
It's considered canonical.
I'll have to check it out.
Well, shit, I'm going to have to change one of my names.
Well, no. Keep it.
I'll talk about it. No, I had no knowledge of this.
Yeah. Also, I was surprised is that, like, in one of the asides, one of his numerous asides, he was like, after everything was found out, people started getting the copyrights to all these movies.
They didn't already?
Yeah, like because the immersive of...
Are you talking about the post-war games VR simulations?
Yeah, like, you know that somebody would have been like, hey, why don't we just, like, do it like that? Like, you mean, like, Dragon Slayer, but in 3D? Yeah!
Well, maybe not. Who knows? I'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
I'm just wondering why they didn't have the copyright already.
Good point.
Like, surely all this stuff is copyrighted.
A little aside here before continuing on. I'm going to be donning my movie speculation hat. Mm-hmm. Because the movie, in theory, will be coming out shortly after this podcast release. I've watched the trailer and all that, and they do have a few times have references to Back to the Future. They have a DeLorean show up. They have the kind of Back to the Future light chime theme playing. Mm. I posit that one of the things we're probably going to see in the movie is that instead of War Games being the first gate challenge, mm-hmm. I'm going to posit that it's going to be Back to the Future.
Oh man, I'm going to be weirdly into that.
And it's going to be more thematically appropriate to boot.
Yeah.
Because, think about it, the movie Back to the Future is about time traveling from the 1980s to 1955. Wouldn't it be appropriate to have a VR simulation that effectively takes you back to the 1980s, which is all about all this focus that, you know, the game designer is focusing on in the first place? Thematic.
Nice.
No, that works really well.
Well, here's the problem, though. Unless consider the real world, and I mean, but by this time, I mean our actual real world. Which studio is doing Ready Player One?
Spielberg. Is it
Spielberg? So
mm-hmm.
That E.T. means that...
Jaws.
Yeah.
Spielberg was the EP. I think Spielberg was the producer on Back to the Future.
Mm. Well, what I mean is that they get to use references from that work, but not other work, you know?
Like, say, Ultraman.
For instance.
Well, you may have noticed that it's now the Iron Giant.
To be fair, yeah. I really mm-hmm. like the Iron Giant.
Yeah.
Superman.
But that's like late 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There'll be a shuffling around of the references and all that, because there are going to be companies out there that'll kind of license that out for next to free because it's kind of like free advertising. Yeah. I don't think that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
At least not in the great scheme of things.
Well, it's kind of funny, like, seeing what he didn't include, such as any Nintendo.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit.
That's really weird.
Like, even in that last list of video game consoles and Anorak's study, there was no Nintendo.
What the fuck?
I think that one is the fact that he was probably imagining making a screenplay out of this eventually anyway, and Nintendo is notorious about not licensing out their stuff for movies.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, just talking from a fiction point of view, that is a major, like, if your whole thesis is that this is an everything 80s to not have
Mario Jumpman, not Mario Jumpman.
Mm-hmm. Is just
freaking Donkey Kong.
It's just, it's a little weird.
Huh. I never even thought about that. I mean, I'm just satisfied they referenced adventure. I mean, come on. Yeah. But yeah, I think we kind of covered a lot of the story here. You know, again, overall, as a kind of VR junkie myself, I found the story overall enjoyable. It's just I skim through a lot of the social interaction parts.
There's a lot to chew, but not much to actually eat.
There's food, but not nourishment.
I couldn't bring myself to enjoy this. Not really. There were too many issues for me.
I am actually weirdly excited for the movie.
Because
I feel like the movie might fix a lot of the problems I had with the book.
I was actually really surprised after I read the book, I saw the trailer for the movie, and it looks really close to it.
Yeah. And, like, even up to the final scene that they show.
Yeah.
Well, because so far, at least with the trailers and all that, they've shown the action scenes, which, as we mentioned before, the author Ernest Cline there does action pretty well, I think.
Yeah.
It's just the set dressings and social stuff can be a little awkward at times.
Visually, how do you make people paying, not just doing joust, but people paying, you know, arcade box joust?
Well, here's the thing, remember?
You play Darude Sandstorm in the background.
Never mind, that's my answer now. I like it.
Also, I just want to take a moment and say that I really like the cover of Pure Imagination that some of the traders have.
True.
Mm. Like, I am here for that.
You just like covers of things.
It's true, I do.
All right, guys.
So, I guess now we're on to the, what will we change? Our story treatments.
All right, I'm going to go first. Because mine isn't terribly difficult or thorough. This is, if I were writing the book, I would not have done it from the point of view of Wade. I wouldn't have done it at the point of view of any of the top five. I want to know what it's like being, again, somebody in a poverty-stricken area of the world, seeing this puzzle pass by. Mm. Maybe they're part of one of the clans that get together.
Yeah.
And yeah, then I want them to win, obviously. I don't want, but the position of always having been the best is, it's kind of boring to me. I want harder odds. That's it. Okay. Sorry. That's me.
Well, I'd argue that like the third part of the book, the crystal key part was the attempt to try and do that, right?
I can see that.
Because the Sixers took over the gate, but they were stuck and kind of sucked.
And wasn't that so much more interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Though no one in the Sixer headquarters who's listened to Schoolhouse Rock.
There was a clue provided shortly beforehand that you had to have three people working together.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily obvious.
No. The clues were on, I admit, I kind of like the puzzle. I like the puzzle stuff a lot. but I want to have yet even more of an underdog than Wade represents. I want the most underdog of underdogs.
So basically, you'd almost have Artemis and company be at the top there or whatever, or the Sixers. And then you have somebody kind of finding clever ways to sneak past the Sixer defenses.
Yes, more cleverness.
So it's like, oh, they have the impenetrable force field. But I studied under the D&D Dungeon Magazine issue number 43 that this impenetrable force field, if you're wearing the ring of Arsuviac, that lets you pass through any force field.
Actually, no, I would not do that.
No.
I know.
What I mean, though,
I liked it, Brendan.
Is I would not do.
Thank you.
I wouldn't do this kind of nerdgasm stuff, actually. Because if my character was good at all the nerd stuff, then they would be Wade Wilson, wouldn't they? Or Wade Watts, or the fuck his name is.
Wade Wilson, I believe, is Deadpool.
I would watch Deadpool do this in a heartbeat.
That would be a very, very different story.
That would be an amazing story. Are you doubting that?
All the Sixers end up dead in the real world.
In the real world.
Wait, were there any references to 80s, comic books?
I don't remember there being, but I don't know.
That's a good point.
Yeah, oh my God, can you imagine if like people... like the X-Men planet. Leaving aside that amazing mental picture.
There was Spider-Man because that's how Wade got his giant robot.
Well, that's the Japanese Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay.
Which is its own hilarity.
If my character was able to do that kind of stuff, they would be. I want them to be doing stuff in the real world to be... you know, making, I don't know, connections with other people in game. I want a different solution. You know what? I want this character to find a solution that isn't what the creator of the game wanted. Or was it? Everybody thinks, oh, you have to have all this, you know, super duper knowledge in order to, well, maybe you don't. Maybe the game creator all this time has regretted their weird, I don't know. The point is, I like subverting shit.
The game creator did kind of regret all his time spent in the Oasis.
Oh, that's right.
He explicitly says it.
Like, go out there, have a life.
Dude, I just wasted 5 years of my life chasing after this. What the fuck?
And I hope you learned a lesson about that.
Now go take these multiple billions of dollars and go fuck off.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed by the fact that the solution that everybody thought it was going to be, learn everything about this dude's life, is actually the solution. And I'm like, no, fuck that. We could do cooler things.
I like that, actually. I kind of like the notion that actually solving the game involves, like, subverting the game itself.
Subversion. Anyway, that's me. Right.
Okay.
Right. I'm going to take what you have, Kat, and go one level deeper. And go, not even person, and also pursuing the egg, but also not as good as Wade, but Tales in the Oasis. Like, just the regular Joes trying to live and work inside this society that is now. Because he did do a decent world building.
So basically, you're proposing making a shared universe of Ready Player One.
Yeah, yeah. Like, not even, like, one main character, but, like, you know, possibly, like, multiple viewpoints.
You know what I'd love to know more about is the indentured servants.
Yeah, those people. Like, no, that's one person who's like, whatever fucking happened to through the early 2000s. I'm going to hang out on the Matrix planet, okay? I want to dress like weird BDSM people. Like that person's life.
I want to take a moment and say that actually the world I would hang out on is actually the Kingdom Hearts world, because I have no shame.
You would.
Yeah.
And I just want to enjoy life.
I don't know what goes on in Kingdom Hearts world.
A lot of eating of ice cream, Kat. That's all you need to know.
Ice cream in Bren.
Sea salt ice cream. Come at me.
Popsicles.
Sea salt popsicles and yelling at Donald Duck. That is all I want.
That's a really good question. What planet would you all hang out on? Leaving aside Pippin's answer.
I would primarily hang out in the Dungeons and Dragons world because I am a huge, huge nerd.
I'm going to say it, and I'm so sorry, everybody. I would hang out in Harry Potter world.
Fair.
Because there's so much to do. I would just want to recreate all the my favorite fanfic.
All of it?
Even that one?
Okay. When I say recreate. Anyway, yeah, no, I'd totally be. Or, alternately, Star Trek, but in, like, the safe areas.
Nice.
Is that you, Alex, then?
Yeah. I know.
Zelda.
I was going to say.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd probably hang out on the Nintendo worlds.
There you go.
Both
Zelda, Metroid.
Important question.
Yeah.
Is your princess always on another planet?
Oh.
That was Super Mario Galaxy, Pip.
And yes.
Yeah, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask.
We're doing a reference spam.
Pop culture. Sell it.
See, this is why I can't get too mad at all the references he makes, because I know that left to our own devices, we are just that bad.
That's why it should have been in dialogue, like here, together.
Ah, yeah.
Like we are.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
As a family.
Aww.
So, where were we?
Alex was doing his story treatment. I interrupted.
I think I interrupted.
Yeah. I'd have good old, what's his name? Joe wants to be in the Matrix. So, I'm in the Oasis, which is doing the Matrix world, which is then going into the Matrix. How deep can I go? And he's on this, like, web chat with the person who's in Inception world. I don't know, man. I've been building sandcastles.
Oh my god, can you imagine the Truman Show world?
Oh, wow.
You just have a POV camera on you at all times, which they do say exists in that universe. So.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Oh, just imagine how fucked up the horror movie worlds are.
Oh my god, it's Pippin's nightmare.
It really is.
I mean, it has to exist in that universe, right?
Yeah.
Oh my god, the Rick and Morty worlds.
Come on, Morty. We're in the Oasis, Morty.
He's taking Roy off the grid.
we gotta find that egg, Morty. Get all this money, Morty.
So I think Al's now changed his story treatment to Rick and Morty. So.
Yeah. But no, and also unplug. See, in the life of the people who can't even fucking afford the fucking goggles.
That's true. It's free for students, but
once you graduate,
you're fucked.
We can see that basic services are at least, accommodated. Like, people can't all be automated because, there's just not that much aluminum if people aren't working.
That's true. There has to be some level of real world work going on. So what's it like for those people who are watching from the sidelines of this, like, game going on?
Like, toward the end of the story, the guy who works in the Oasis parlor.
Yeah, him. Just being like, oh, okay, whatever.
The weird stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, it's another pervert.
Wade made himself way too noticeable for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to spend a zillion billion dollars. Do you have a zillion billion dollars? I do, actually, but not for any reason.
I think by that point, he also changed his name back to Wade.
Oh, God.
And took back his original identity. And I'm like, bro, it is too soon for that.
Yeah.
I like that H was going around in, like, a fucking RV, and that's why you could never find him. Like, A+, that is how you you stay off the grid.
Operationally secure.
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't think H actually planned that. That just sort of happened.
H had a ton of money and had started off the grid from the beginning.
H got kicked out of her home.
Listen, yeah. H, I'm respecting H and their capabilities.
H is clearly the best.
Yes.
Around.
No one's ever going to keep her down. All right, Al, is that you?
Yeah, that's me. You know, just Tails in the Oasis.
I'm sorry, every time you said Tails, though, I kept thinking that you meant, like, Sonic and Tails.
I was thinking Tails of the Crypt, so.
I was thinking Tailspin. What? That's DuckTales.
See, we just did it again.
Oh my god, you guys, what if we're...
We're Wade.
What if we're Wade?
Wade was in us all along.
Ew. Oh, gross.
The book shined a mirror on ourselves.
See, this, Black Mirror this World. This is why I was trying not to diss all of the pop culture references because I didn't want to be that much of a hypocrite.
I had no fears about being a hypocrite.
Yeah.
Oh my Cap, god.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Quick aside. Would you go to Black Mirror World?
Oh my god, hell no.
Fuck no.
I mean, only if I could guarantee that I wasn't a main character. Yeah, I could just be like, wow. Whew. I'd just be like, you know, that's rough, man. You shouldn't do that to your cookies. That's all I can say.
It's like you're just eating popcorn. It's like, that's fucked up.
Oh, which movie... okay, no. Sorry. I was about to be Pop Culture Salad. Now I'm really... Damn it, Pip.
Once you notice, you can't stop.
Once you pop, you just can't stop.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Let's break out of this.
Can we, though?
Pip, go.
Well, Alex...
Pip, go.
Okay. All right. So, Alex sort of mentioned this a bit with talking about the people in the real world. And that was something I was really interested in because that was the bit that I really liked. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. What's going on in the real world? And I was specifically wondering what's actually being done to solve all of these problems. Because sure, our main characters don't see what's happening, if anything, to solve the problem that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
The energy crisis, all that jazz.
I believe the plan they have going forward is throw money at it.
Really? Once you throw enough money at something is gonna, there has to be some sort of plan. And resistance movements.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And actually I watched the trailer and it seems a little bit like that what's going to happen. which is part of why I'm excited for the movie.
Oh, you're going to go watch the movie?
Well,
I am.
Eventually. I might not watch it when it first comes out, because I don't watch anything when it first comes out these days.
That's true.
I wonder if she'll be healed up for a second, in time for watching it on second run theaters.
You might. Wonder Woman is still playing in my second run theater.
Nice.
I love Wonder Woman. Everyone should consider themselves lucky that I have not thought of a way to turn this really just into Wonder Woman again.
Wonder Woman world. Old lady conspiracy world.
We would have so much fun designing our own planets.
Oh my god.
But
that would be like our full-time occupation, just making planets.
Yeah.
Making planets, la la la.
Nightmare Before Christmas planet. There you go. Do you think there is anyone making a, okay, let's try to fix a world simulation planets in the Oasis?
Oh yeah, there have to be.
Oh wow, oh my god, that'd be...
Fun fact. There are epidemiologists that look at, like, how, say, like, a disease in the World of Warcraft propagated as a model for how epidemics happen in cities.
Oh yeah. That, like, a blood...
Blood fever. Or blood plague, yeah.
Yeah. That's some deep shit.
I love that. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Some of the things that the book was trying to channel, at least, like, the big battles at the end, stuff like that does happen in MMOs, EVE Online's a big name in that kind of conflict where like tens of thousands of dollars worth of like ships get destroyed in big epic battles and there's corporate espionage that happens in game, no less. I mean, this happens in MMOs already.
That's true. I mean, this is a good story to tell if that makes sense. You know, this is a timely thing to tell. The question is, you know, how would we have done it differently maybe? Or would we?
Anyway, but...
But yeah, so seeing the resistance, which I think is actually going to happen more in the movie. I know they mentioned that the government is useless, but there are other organizations around. Maybe they're trying to do something. Science, it still exists.
What?
So there's all that. And if we're going for things that maybe aren't going to be in the movie... I really hope that I'm right that it's happened to the movie. But in terms of what's going on in the... Oasis, sort of a lot of the social movements, because actually a huge chunk of gamers are actually adult women.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that this is so dude heavy is actually not true to life. And also the fact that you can be anyone you want to be. Really, I want to know what the trans community is doing.
Yes.
And the queer community. Because then you can be who you want to be or be who you are.
Mm-hmm.
With no risk of physical violence, which does wonders for one's mental health. And so the resistance in the real world trying to save the world, and resistance maybe in the Oasis trying to save society.
Aww.
What?
Aww.
I'm doing a little dance. Really proud of myself.
Good for you.
All right.
I like
it. And that's me.
And then there was one player. Ready?
Oh.
Sure.
Wow. Wow.
Okay. So here's the thing. As I said before, I actually, despite myself, I, you know, like the book. Stuff I've already mentioned, I skimmed past when I reread it for the podcast. Things I would have changed, mm-hmm. editing out or, you know, changing things around in the mm-hmm. book as written. Weird.
But true.
As I mentioned before, I'd reduce, how about this, reduce the reference spam. Mm. Maybe keep it to dialogue, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I would also just gut entirely the romance subplot. Maybe you can have a hint of it at the very end of the story once they get the task at hand mm-hmm. solved. But like none of this weird teenage romance stuff that just, we've all been teenagers. We know it's awkward as hell. We don't need to relive it.
I stood outside of her planet with a boombox, like from that movie.
Okay, but I also have to say that that is a fundamental misunderstanding of what was happening in that movie when he was standing outside with the boombox. Thank you. Go on.
Thank you, Kat. Thank you.
We'll just not have the romance thing. We can have playful banter and just hint that, you know, maybe at some point down the line after they solve the frickin' Easter egg, then they can sort out feelings and stuff like that. Because frankly, they are all people obsessed with this thing, and maybe we can actually play with themes of obsession, not in a creepy social way, but like with online addiction. You know, that could be a theme to actually tackle.
What?
Weird. Really, they've been dedicating, what, 5 years of their lives to hunting down this Easter egg? That should be a key theme, mm-hmm. right? So we don't need the romance. I am keeping pretty much all of the Oasis bits and, you know, the real world espionage bits, because you know what? Those were action filled. I enjoyed them. I admit I'm probably the target demographic when it comes to the majority of the worlds referenced in the course of the adventure.
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Because I've played Joust, I've played D&D.
Have you played Joust? I never even heard of it before this book.
It's a classic arcade game.
Bren, when Pip and I were growing up, the arcades were dying.
Yep.
Aww.
And I just didn't care.
That's sad.
I think that goes to show how fast pop culture moves.
Oh, look at you making this into a meaningful thing.
Because you're only, what, 6 years older?
Am 6 years older than you guys. He is 4 years older.
Yeah. Difference of a delta of 6 years between us all, and total chunks of the pop culture references get missed entirely. Or at least the nostalgia.
Yeah, nostalgia is a big one.
Like, if you were about 30 when you read this book, all of the pop culture references were like, oh, yeah, I did that when I was young. Cool. Also, Pokemon World.
yes! Oh, I've crushed them all.
Good luck.
We already have that with Pokemon Go.
What?
Yeah, but there aren't any interesting Pokemon around here.
No. Well, the Pokemon Go would probably be a early warning sign that, you know what, the majority of the world would probably get heavy into the Oasis if it existed. Social commentary you can figure out over the course of the rewrites here when we talk about the themes of addiction and how it's escapism and how that doesn't really solve the actual problems at hand here. Now, the other thing that I would do, and this might be a little, I don't know, controversial for the fans of the book, I'd either do interstitials or change around the POV characters constantly throughout the books. It'd be almost like Game of Thrones, where all of a sudden we're doing a POV of Artemis. We're doing a POV of H, following them around on their adventures. you can still have like Wade as like the primary protagonist, whatever that storyline there, but I want to see what everybody else is doing. We could have a much more hard emotional impact with Shoto at the point of Daito's death. That kind of stuff.
I am into that.
But this is where I was talking about the Andy Weir thing. I was also going to be throwing in POVs of Sorrento.
Yes.
And the Sixers as a whole, because I really want to point the fact out that it's probably a shit company to work for, too.
Wouldn't it be great if it wasn't, though? Wouldn't it be great if it actually was a pretty great company? And we're like, no, this would be pretty good.
It's unfortunate they have those indentured servants, yeah. But, you
we
know, what can
benefits,
you do?
Benefits, there's pay.
Yep.
Yeah.
And only a little bit of family murder.
Only a couple of them knew about that.
And I mean, honestly.
And the people who carried it out.
Hey, who are the people who set the bombs? What about them? I want to know who they are as people.
Good point.
Yeah. Oof. Why are we setting these bombs? Because we were told to. Oh, yeah.
Fair enough.
Huh, cool. I like having money. Yeah. But the reason why I was going to throw in the Sorrento or Sixer POV chapters is to really up the tension when Wade eventually does the espionage mission toward the end of the book. Because then we know as readers how screwed Wade is upon entering the building, and thus, like, he might not make it out of here. Maybe he doesn't necessarily know the codes right away or something like that, you know. It's not a sure bet that he's going to make it out of there. Because I think early on in the segment of espionage, it's like, yeah, I had the backdoor access. It's good. We're good.
There was never any worry at all, ever.
When he was talking about the auction site, when he was like, we could put this Ultraman effect online, and then he went on to talk about it. Like, you can buy anything on there. I even bought a couple of
IO9 passcodes. Yeah.
Useless, since you need to be actually inside their headquarters to actually use them, so.
But I want the thrill of having
But they were cheap, so,
Yeah.
I want to stick it to Serena.
Have that in passing.
Yeah, something like that.
You could change the POV with whoever has the high score.
Has the key?
Well, they all have keys.
Shut up. I mean, like, you know what I mean.
But has the high score, because first it's Wade, then it's Artemis, and then it's Sorrento.
Yes.
Well, that would kind of limit the number of POV changes I could do between chapters.
But you can sort of loosely hang it on that.
Okay. So like the first time a score change happens, boom, right there we go to a POV character. Okay, I like that. I can dig that.
The only person making up rules as to how the scoring happens is you, the author.
True.
So apparently I'm on the right track since my score is going up.
Or whenever someone's score changes on the board, like H never actually makes it to high player, but does score.
Yeah.
H scores. H can do whatever the hell H wants.
Bam, chicka, bam, bam.
Right.
So yeah, those would be the majority of my changes there. So just kind of practical things. I'm actually just keeping the majority of the story as is, because as I said, overall, I like the story. Yeah.
I can see why people like it.
I can see why people like it.
It has a solid frame.
I want to be in the world there.
You want to be where the people are?
Yes.
I was thinking the same thing.
Disney World.
Oh my god, Disney World.
This is why I'm hanging out in Kingdom Hearts.
Fair enough. I would actually go to Disney World. I changed my mind.
Wait. In Disney World, would you be able to approve that Elsa and Anna's parents died on the way to the Tangled wedding?
Obviously.
And that their ship is the one that Ariel was going through.
Yep.
I knew about the heading to the Tangled thing. I didn't know about the ship being the one that Ariel's, you know.
Looting.
Like, I think it's because, like, the general location of the two countries is it's vaguely around where,
Sweden.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what you're thinking, but I'm thinking about games.
What?
So we just rolled a die. We're actually being honest here for a change.
We're always honest. Leave me alone.
And actually, we rolled a 12-sided die because we actually have 12 of these different games on our...
For now.
And we got a 1, which is The Evil Overlord Was Here. On-the-fly plot changes based on a random trope.
Okay. Let's all pull up our trope generators.
I guess we can all go to our random trope generators of choice.
All right.
I'm going to TV trailers.
Oh, same.
Yeah, same.
I got you, fam.
Can I go first, you guys? Because I'm loving it. Uh-huh. All right. Story go generator. Setting. Hidden Nazi bases. I want Nazis.
Oh, my.
I don't want this to be the IOI. Or maybe it is the IOI. Maybe in this fevered pitched battle between the IOI and the regular egg hunters, the Gunters, if you will, unbeknownst to either of these groups, because they're busy, like, playing their little game, in the social construct of the game, has been developing unfortunate fascist tendencies. And so, actually, it's going to do one of my favorite tropes, which is where the bad guy and the good guy join together to fight the even badder guy. Because look, the IOI wants Oasis to continue, right? The Gunters want the Oasis to continue. Like, they have different ideas about how that should happen. But what if there's the hidden Nazis who are like, why do we even have an Oasis? This is something for, you know, and just throw in every stupid reason not to do something. And so then the IOI and the Gunters have to fight together to fight Nazis. And if we can coincidentally make those Nazis subtweet real political issues that we're having in our day and age, that'd be great.
We have to destroy Planet Pepe.
Oh my god. All right, so that's me.
So I got Mook debut cutscene.
What is that?
In some action games, there are many different kinds of mooks, and you're often too absorbed into the action to notice you meet a certain type for the first time. So if the developers really want to make sure you notice them and don't forget them, should they do? Well, make a special presentation for each one of them, or at least a good part of them. So when you, first run into a particular kind of monster, there will be a special cutscene moment where they pose or something and go, look, I exist. Which I weirdly feel like would work a lot in this story. Not necessarily change the plot at all.
Okay.
I can just, you know, see, you know, whenever an IOI person shows up, you sort of zoom in on them and go, look, they're here. I won't forget them. They'll be important later. That was a boring one.
But are you sticking with it?
Well, let's see what my next... Wait, I got let's you and him fight. Because I will click things until it works for me. And I can just... I would love a situation where actually one of the other top five or one of the Sixers being sneaky or something actually tries to purposely sow discord among the top players. So basically go let's you and him fight.
Nice. Can that be what my guy is doing in from my plot?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm stealing it.
Fair enough.
Wow.
Look, you got to play the game to win, am I right?
But what if Artemis was purposely trying to keep H and Wade separate?
Actually, we did get a weird feeling about that. Do you remember in a couple of their text messages between Artemis and Wade? She was like, how well do you actually know H? And that never went anywhere. And she asked him twice.
I was trying to question people's identities, which, by the way, was another thing that he was trying to talk about, but I felt he didn't really do very well.
That's unfortunate.
But yeah, let's you and him fight. It's also just a thing I really like saying.
You gonna take off your earrings? Hold my flower?
Hold my flower! Baby, I got your flower.
Okay. All right, Al?
Let's see. Berserker Tears.
Oh, no.
So, basically, that fight hit at the end, except Wade is crying.
Wait, really?
Well, a character is fighting or screaming or deeply lamenting, angsting, sometimes in a rage that's frightening to behold. At the same time, the tears are streaming down to her face.
Shoto.
That he does kind of spaz out like that, yeah.
You killed Shoto in this game!
He's fine in real life. I'll see him in about an hour.
In fact, he's on the phone with me right now.
Buddy, I'm right here, buddy.
He's probably enjoying some Malamars or something.
In fact, he just called me and he's having buffalo wings!
Oh man, what's that line that got repeated on Toonami commercials a lot. Shining Finger.
Take this. My love, my anger, and all of my sorrow. Shining Finger Sword. Rah! Rah! Rah!
That should have been in the book.
Agreed.
My Shining Finger.
It was a Gundam from the 80s.
Right?
Shining
right.
Finger.
That's true.
That had to be a weird translation, right?
Yeah, that was weird translation from the time. I actually know the full line. This hand of mine glows with an awesome power. Emphasis. Weird emphasis on power. Its burning grip is telling me to defeat you. Yeah.
So really, I think that's what's actually going to happen in the movie.
Listen, if it line does, for line. I will love it so fucking much.
Oh, man.
Worth price of admission right there.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So the random trope I got, soul-saving crusader. Basically the character who righteously murders and tortures people for their own good.
Also my character.
Well, those are haptic suits, and like, hey, we know a little bit of a back end that because of one of the bugs in this game, once the pain starts to pass a certain threshold, it cuts off, but, you can hack it a little bit and it doesn't shut off.
Well, what about, forget that, what if you're just getting a lot of little tiny repetitive hurts? I mean, that's the water torture method, isn't it?
True.
Well, anyway, to what I
do sorry.
With it.
Oh, sorry. I was getting too into it.
Yeah, we went creepy.
Yeah, where's the deep end? Let me go jump in here, because the thought that came to mind is a almost Kill Bill revenge fic in which Shoto hunts down the members of IOI who killed Daito.
Ooh.
Using, you know, stuff from that wares site that causes that haptic suit malfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we're talking like goes and hunts them down. With a Daito sword.
Dun, dun, dun.
Although, I don't know if that's really saving their souls so much as getting revenge, but that's just where my mind space went with that. Maybe we can have like a sanctimonious speech about how he's, you know, righting the wrongs that the Sixers did over the course of the last several years. I don't know.
Also, quick aside, did anyone else here think that Shoto was actually going to do something with that Masamune weird sword that had a...
Oh, yeah, that was another Chekhov's gun that never fired.
He had a Masamune?
What's a Masamune?
Usually a big deal in JRPGs.
Okay. Also, no Chrono Trigger. It went all over the place.
I was thinking that.
Oh, wait,
the Chrono Trigger came out in the early 90s.
True.
Again, they referenced like Firefly and Buffy and stuff like that. So.
But just as... an aside, not part of the...
Yeah, it wasn't a focus.
Yeah. Whereas I feel like Chrono Trigger would have been great for a focus. Not only because I would have understood it a bit more. Still leaving Cat in the Dust, but whatever.
Yeah, I'm like,
Video games?
Video games.
Yeah.
Is that it, everybody?
Do we have any final words, final thoughts?
With
regards to Ready Player One?
I mean, my final thought is always going to be, may we all be so lucky as to... sell a book and have a movie deal.
Hell yeah. No, I mean, kudos to the author for being able to accomplish this much. And as I said, he does action very well.
Which translates to movie very well.
Oh, yeah. I will also admit, guys, I don't know if it's because of Ready Player One or what, but somebody recommended to me the game Kingdom of Loathing, and now I am super fucking into it. Like, really into it. For those of you listening at home, if you want to have the weird adventure experience and you've never had it before, I would suggest Kingdom of Loathing.
Kingdom of Loathing Panic.
Yeah, I mean, coming as somebody who tries to evangelize VR tech and stuff like that, books like this kind of make me want to have the tech advancing in leaps and bounds and, you know, let's get the haptic technology in place. We have the visuals almost there. Let's just get everything else in place. Let's get the UI in place. Come on, people.
Do we have the visuals almost there?
The Oculus and the Vive they're very high
fidelity.
Yeah, very high fidelity. Coming soon, you're probably going to get your 8K displays, which at that point, that's when you really start decreasing the screen door effect on the screens. And I know I'm going way nerdy into this, but that reduction in that effect, I think, is just going to make what you see in a virtual world a lot more realistic feeling. Yeah.
I want you to know.
And then get rid of the latency.
What? I want you to know that I put my hands on my cheeks because I am so pleased. I'm so excited and I just can't hide it.
Say by the Bell Planet.
You learn a valuable lesson at the end of every single quest. This is the secondary game. We're just going to keep on doing this all night, people.
Let me go get the ice cream. I can do it.
Ice cream planet.
Wait, but you can't actually eat it. Like, it's not, you can't taste it.
Actually, there is some experimental rigs that have taste as well.
Wait, for reals?
Yeah, very basic chemical stuff. Your sense of smell triggers that stuff a lot more strongly than you think, too.
Yeah, so, and you can pretty much eat anything if it's, you know, mixed up and put into a shake.
Ew.
Anyway.
I'm learning so much that I'm not sure I wanted to know.
That's the future, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Animaniacs Planet.
Oh. That was Ready Player One. And as always, if you have a story to submit, head on over to nostoryissacred.com/submission. Follow us on Twitter at nostoryissacred, or you can send us an email through contact@nostoryissacred.com. Your hosts have been Alex McDonald, Brendan McDonald, Pippin McDonald, and Catherine Crichton. Editing for this episode, done by Brendan. Transcript is done by Ashley DaCosta. Art by Jay Wolf. Show notes and transcript are available at nostoryissacred.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. And please rate, review, and subscribe to No Story is Sacred. You can also visit our Patreon page to support the show and get neat rewards at patreon.com/nostoryissacred. See you next time when we talk about a story Alex is currently working on called A Body in the Void.
It's Alex's turn. Come out to play.
I was hoping you guys would forget about me.
Don't you
forget about me.
Oh god, John Hughes Planet. Until then, where no story is sacred and any story can be changed. This was Brendan.
This was Kat.
This was Pippin.
And this was Alex.
And we're
No Story is Sacred.
Duh.